mind throwing a leg over the ball just quiet.
he might be out of play for a little while.
Yes, hello and welcome to the Ballcast, the Wednesday edition of the Fox Football Podcast. Quick roll call, Brenton Speed is in the house.
I am here.
Andy Harper.
Present.
He's also in the house. And Murray Shaw is present. Speed and Shaw very happy this morning after Champions League results went their team's way. This week on the show, we're going to wade into the debate on playing surfaces. And given Adam Peacock's pitch report after the game at the SCG on Saturday night, we literally could be waiting. The Matildas scored three but copped five, and we'll look at what we learnt. Plus, some big news for Brenton Speed fans. And we've got a presentation for Andy Harper. Hello, gentlemen. How are you?
Hello, Muzz. I'm intrigued by the big news. But, I heard we were maybe doing some publicity shots because this ball cast has
it's
a life of its own.
It's taken off.
So
sprouted.
I made sure I had roots. An iron shirt ready to go, look crisp, look sharp.
Did you and drive here with your thumb under the...
Well, that's what I was going to say. This is my trivia question early. Did I drive here with this shirt on, or did I put it on in the wardrobe area?
Or do you buy...
Neo crimpling
shirts that you don't have to iron?
So this question is to you, Andy. What do you think?
Speedy. You look desirable.
So this shirt looks ironed, ready to go, crisp, or has it been altered?
Well, it could have been altered, but I'm not sure if that's an off-the-rack version. Is that what you mean? Speedy, you look eminently presentable,
well,
as always.
Well, I did drive in and I have the seatbelt draped over it.
Congratulations.
And I thought about you all the way, say, should I be manipulating
the
seatbelt?
Well, I've achieved one thing, Speed. I've got you thinking about me outside of a commentary box.
Now, what do you want me to start with, the presentation for Harps or the big news for Brenton Speed?
Big news for Brenton Speed.
Well, you know, when I used to play cards growing up with my sisters, there was a card game called Uno. Mm. And
still
we used to say, yeah, you know that I know that I don't want to play Uno.
Yes.
So you reckon I don't know what you're going to say?
No. Do you?
I don't know. Maybe.
Let's find out.
Is it like? Is this like he's on first and who's on second?
Let's go back to your Jenga. What? Your kaplunk.
We've turned into Stan Laurel. And
did.
Well, the big news for Brenton Speed fans.
Firstly, is there any football going to be discussed today?
Yes. Right. We'll get to that at the end of the show.
Do we need to warn people that, you're just...
Yeah, just fast forward 10 minutes. Some people enjoy the first 5 minutes of this podcast.
People, really?
Yeah, but some people need to get a life.
Yeah, other people turn it off.
Yeah. Right.
Could not imagine why.
The Brenton Speed news is at the Johnny Warren Julie Dolan Awards on May the 13th, Brenton Speed will be presenting Referee of the Year.
Well.
He will be up on stage presenting Referee of the Year.
Shock.
You did know
I knew this. Well, I knew this.
So what happens when Chris Beath wins Referee of the Year and you've got to make an awkward presentation?
Why did you think that maybe you were the only one that knew that? And
well,
I didn't know it.
Well, that's why I asked you.
I didn't know what you were going to say.
Well, you know.
But you know I know.
You know that I know.
Yeah, that I don't want to play you know.
Well, I think this is fantastic news.
Well, they obviously
being recognised as the doyen of referee officialdom.
Do they get a papier-mâché Eugene Brazzali? Like a little papier-mâché figurine of Eugene Brazzali?
I just want Speedy, after he's awarded it, to give his thoughts on perhaps who should have got it.
Or does Speed give the Referee of the Year an entire collection of voodoo dolls made in the replicas of the commentary team at Fox Sport that every time someone makes unnecessary or nasty comments about referees, then they can just sit there with the voodoo doll and jab the said Fox Sports commentator up the Khyber Pass with a pin.
What about when Speedy opens the envelope and it says, and the winner of this year's Referee of the Year is Chris Beath, and then he just gives the VAR sign so that we have to go back and check it?
I think he should go, the winner of this year's official Eugene Brazzali's, 1 point, and then just go on for 10 minutes.
Yes, take it over.
2 points, and whilst I'm on 2 points, there was this referee in the Champions League match from Austria, blah, blah, blah.
Unfortunately, Jared Gillett can't be with us tonight, but he joins us via satellite.
That's right.
Jared actually only refed 3 games this year, but he's amazingly won the award this year.
Has he been ruled out of winning that award?
Like, he can't be.
He can't be ruled out, can he? No, I wouldn't have thought so.
No,
but they usually give it to the ref who's going to ref the grand final,
yes,
and that's sort of their reward, and he can't ref it. So
he could. He is that good. He could referee it via satellite.
Mm. Really?
Yeah.
Almost interactive, like you can drop in the interview subject now, can't you? In interviews, television-wise.
A hologram of Jared Gillett.
Yeah, just reffing.
Yeah, I like it.
Virtual reality.
All right.
I think they've definitely switched off.
They've definitely switched off now. Let's move on to the Harps presentation because in some circles, of the Australian football community, Andy Harper is very famous for this piece of commentary.
And you can see the Reds reinforcements heading for the danger zone. It's the floated ball to the back stick. Travis Dodd up like a salmon, a spawning salmon. Travis Dodd up like a salmon, a spawning salmon.
Yes, and he's become renowned for that piece of commentary, and now I'm pleased to say that he's been immortalised for that piece of commentary because they're now making T-shirts out of the spawning salmon Andy Harper up like a spawning salmon.
In salmon colour.
And I'm prepared to present it to you at this very moment, and although it doesn't make for great podcast fodder, we'd like you to put it on.
This is a very touching moment.
And I should point out that the company that makes this, get behind them, is Football Cult, so that's FutbolCult. Get on their website because they've got all sorts of T-shirts there, including a Thomas Broich T-shirt. And anyone who was watching Sunday Shootout a couple of weeks ago would have seen Archie, John Cosmina and Ned Zelich all wearing their selective T-shirts. But there is a great range.
Come on,
there.
Hubs, they're rolling record on this. Show the shirt to our social media convener.
Yeah, you'll be able to see this on the Fox Sports social media channels.
Very flattering if this is for me. They've put it in size L. I haven't been L for 50
years. No, it's actually large. I reckon that might be all right for
size L.
Yeah. L is actually large. That's good podcast.
No, like what I mean, bigger. I thought he just said it wasn't going to be big enough for
this
him.
This is super sized L. Well, look at this.
Well, try it on, Andrew.
If you don't mind. Now, this is magnificent. Yeah, what an innovation.
There's a Thomas Broich one there that you would like. But my call to Anthony Tsiakos, who is the managing director of footballcult.com, is that we need an Oh My Goodness T-shirt for Brenton Speed, absolutely.
Yeah.
And more importantly, we need a Baldcast T-shirt, don't you think? Do you could get him to work on a Baldcast T-shirt that we might
What colour does the Baldcast come in? Tablecloth checks?
I don't know.
Well, a rival company, or maybe it's the same one, I think it was a rival company, already did the Oh My Goodness shirt, which my family got me for Christmas last year.
Did they?
Which I found most amusing. So someone's already jumped the gun on that one.
We'll get Harps to try that on later.
This is beautifully branded, the Football Cult.
Yeah.
Not just the T-shirt, but I'm just looking at the stuff that comes with it. It's really presented really nicely.
There's a lot of stuff there from the 1974 Socceroos, remembering that, and some great moments in Australian football history. FutbolCult.com. Righto, let's move on. We should have led straight into the Brazzalies, but Speedy, if you could keep your Brazzalies relatively short this week, given the waffle we've started with.
And as you say, you know, I'm presenting the Referee of the Year award, so let's see how positive I can be here. Danny McKaylee tipping up the handball against Danny Rose in the early minutes of the Manchester City v Tottenham game, sliding in to effect a block with an arm raised. He said to old mate Bjorn Kuipers, come over and have a look, and they gave a penalty. Rio Ferdinand up in the experts box, the punditry of Rio Ferdinand says, that's never a penalty. We need a player, former player up there. It is a penalty. Look, people have won championships by sliding in and blocking everything with their arms. I think of Chelsea about two or three years ago, whenever it was, Gary Cahill and John Terry, they were specialists in blocking the shots with their arm raised.
As a Spurs fan, Speedy, I didn't have a problem with it.
And they think they can get away with it. It's a pen.
It's a penalty.
The fourth official tipping up a throw-in. Melbourne City against Brisbane. Jack Morgan, the fourthy. Wilson Brown, the assistant. Jamie McLaren looked in the eye of the fourth official and said, that's out off him. The fourthy looks down to his assistant 30 metres away and goes, that is a Melbourne City throw. The assistant goes, who was hedging his bets, Melbourne City throw. The communication between the A-League officials, outstanding.
That's two bits of positivity.
Two votes.
Three votes
for Danny McKaylee.
I need to have a lie down.
Craig Zetter for recommending the upgrade to the red card for Stamatolopoulos.
Mm.
One vote.
That's three positives. I actually thought the refereeing on the weekend, including at the Sydney Derby, was very, very good.
Mm, generally.
I agree. I couldn't find much fault this week.
Here's one. I thought you were going to be all over this one. All over this one, Speed. But he is your new love child of the referee ranks, Alex King in the big blue.
Very good.
Niedermeyer takes out, I think it was Lafondra, on the sideline, level with the penalty area from behind. Lafondra rolls him. Niedermeyer just
grabs his shirt.
Back. Yep. Lafondra is, well, put it this way, there's nowhere apart from four different types of turf between him and the goal. Niedermeyer makes no bones about it. You're not going anywhere, bro. And Alex King says, free kick, that's it. Now, at that moment, I thought of you, Speed, with steam coming out of your ears. And this is a shoe-in for the Brazalis.
Yeah.
A shoe-in. But, obviously, Gillett rhymes with fillet, is now in the old dart, and Alex King is now the untouchable one.
King a la Gillett.
How many minus?
King rhymes with ring.
How many minus votes are you giving?
Well, it's not my segment.
I take recommendations on board.
You it was a yellow card every single day of the week. Let's stay with you, Harps, because it's in the same game.
Yes.
The player you enjoyed watching over the weekend.
Well, to say I enjoyed watching him is probably not... I did enjoy watching him, but Anthony Caceres, you'll get what I mean when I explain myself. It's not as though it was a man of the match performance, but this was an Anthony Caceres where it was one of those teasing Caceres performances, right, where you watch him like this and you understand why clubs have chased him. You understand why Manchester City signed him and thought we might be able to do something here. And you understand why when that didn't work, someone else has given him a go. And I sort of hope for his sake and for the general sake of the viewers, because he's a very nice footballer to watch when he's deciding to play, that Steve Corica has found the key to Anthony Caceres. I don't know. It's too early to say that. But there were glimpses in his game that remind you what the fuss was about. Of course, the challenge for Anthony is to turn the glimpses into something consistent and deliver on his potential. So that's why I say it's not really the player to watch. It's not as though he was barnstorming, but it's about time Anthony started delivering big time on the basis of that potential, because he's got so much to offer.
Speedy, the player you enjoyed watching on the weekend is fast becoming a favourite of this bald cast.
Yeah, in a losing cause, the highlights of Max Burgess and his penetrating through balls against Adelaide United.
Why didn't he start?
Yeah. He's a brilliant player, rising, and maybe he's learning a lot from playing alongside Sarpreet Singh. Maybe they test each other out on how to play the through balls and weight of passing and what have you. So I'm going to give Max Burgess another little nomination.
I watched a bit of Max Burgess on the weekend. Well, I watched a lot of Max Burgess on the weekend. And I tell you, I'd like to know whether he's got a futsal background, because the way he carries the ball, particularly on the left foot, very similar to Tommy Rogic.
Yeah, yeah.
And I just wonder whether there's a futsal background for Max Burgess as well.
Mm. How old is he?
Good question.
23, I reckon.
Mm. Yeah.
Lefties make it look easy, though, don't they? Maybe they all look like they're from another background. Yeah,
but he's just that player. He's that player that everyone is crying out for at the moment, someone who can make things happen between the lines, creative, always looking for things.
And Matt Miller's a similar vein, like the highlight ball that he produced for the Mariners the other day. Fantastic. Mm.
Mm. The player I enjoyed watching was from the Matildas, and it was Caitlin Ford with that fantastic goal when she turned one of the USA WNT defenders and then stuck it in the far corner. Reminded me a lot of a few of the Mark Viduka goals, actually, when he scored four goals against Liverpool. Mm. You might remember he turned, was it Patrick Berger?
Did his ACL.
That's what I was going to say, who was like out for ages with his ACL because of the way Viduka turned. But fantastic skills. Mm. And Harps leads you into a bit of a discussion that looked very...
Leads you in?
Yeah. See what I did there? Yeah. Well, you mentioned maybe the futsal background.
These things are always intentional.
or not of Max Burgess. And I don't know if Caitlin Ford's got any background with the Corver coaching. Now, the educated listeners of the Baldcast will have heard of Corver coaching as an international franchise, commercial operation, excellent program to develop young kids. And when you go on and you look at what some of the Corver stuff, the first core skill they teach is the turn that Caitlin Ford produced. And skeptics of things like the Corver coaching program think, well, it's all very well to quarterise a training session and have kids doing dribbling skills against plastic hats and whatnot. Of course, they miss the point of the progressions involved, and they miss that these skills, whether or not Caitlin was part of this, are actually dragged out of watching the great players do their thing. That's how they built the program. And I would love to know Caitlin's background, particularly because of this discussion point, but that turn is one of the very first core moves out of Corver. Fantastic program that is, in my opinion, Corver. We should have more of that sort of stuff, teaching kids technique right from the get-go.
And late last year, I would say maybe around September, October, Caitlin Ford, confidence levels were low on the shooting front. So she took a ball, or maybe 10 balls, and practiced daily on her own, went to a training facility and just practice shooting techniques. You can imagine she's out there going, oh, here I am, maybe even doing a little commentary herself, like turning people inside out, shooting bottom corner. Oh, Ford has scored in the World Cup. You know, taking it back to the youth, taking it back to when you're an 8 or 10-year-old and you're in the park and you've got no one to play with or whatever, and so you're practicing and you're putting in the top corner and the bottom corner and you're practicing all that stuff. Suddenly, she brings it out on this stage against the US women's national team because at the age of 24, 25, she was humble enough to go, I've got to work on my game. I just wonder how many A-League players who don't finish week in, week out, go and work on their own game individually.
We'll get to the Matildas in a sec. Do you think Caitlin Ford worked as a number 10?
Brilliant. What a find from Ante Milicic.
Yep.
Credit to him. We talked about this on the broadcast. You needed to find a Rachel Hill in Australian colours. And I think Harps even at the time speculated that Caitlin Ford is that player that is on the wavelength of Sam Kerr. So when they were in the 10-9 role the other day, some of the link-up play was absolutely spellbinding against elite opposition. So I think that's there to stay. The selections in wide areas, Devanna, brilliant. What a goal. And she looked dangerous and looked almost back to her best. The other side, Tamika Butt played in the wide area because that's normally her role, the 10. The wide area, I don't think that's Tamika Butt's role.
Actually, let's change this rundown and let's just keep on with the Matildas because what did we all make of it? Obviously, we scored 3 against the United States, but we shipped 5. I guess the takeaway was that our defence looked a little bit leaky and maybe a question mark over the goalkeeper. Is that what...
No.
I mean, is there some discussion as Williams versus maybe McKenzie Arnold?
Is that what people are saying?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Lydia Williams is just a standout. Number one.
Last goal, lob over the top, caught no man's land.
Oh come on.
No person's land.
No person's land.
No. Are people saying that? Seriously.
Give us a hello.
Lydia Williams is clearly Australia's number one. Remember the one she kept out of the top corner? I mean, she's the only goalkeeper that can get to the top corner and save like that that Australia have at the moment. She's a fantastic goalkeeper. What happened defensively is that Australia picked Gemma Simon as the left back and she got ripped apart the entire game. Now, if Gemma Simon is the second best left back in the country,
who is?
I'm not here.
Who is?
Well, Ali...
And how important is Steph Catley, therefore?
Well, yeah, Steph Catley is the certainly has to be there as the first choice left back, but at a tournament, often you rotate and Elise Kellen-Knight can go into that left back role at times, but
then you lose her passing ability.
Yeah, so I don't want Elise Kellen-Knight being the second choice left back. Gemma Simon's not good enough. Shouldn't be in this Matilda squad. Ali Green jumped onto the stage with Sydney FC. She's only played a handful of games at senior level. A superior player to Gemma Simon, in my opinion. And you also have Angie Beard, who played with the Premier's Plate-winning Melbourne Victory in the left-back role.
This has been a problem for a while too, you might remember, because Caitlin Ford played left-back not long ago against, was it England or France, one of those two games, because they were out of a left-back. Yeah.
And this is the criticism that the Matildas want. They want criticism of players and performances and what have you. I'd like to know, this is a question that has to be asked to Ante Milicic, because if Gemma Simon makes the 23-player squad at the World Cup and plays in the left-back role, then the scouting report is going to be just attack Australia down that side. And it's not just the USA that exploited her. Look back at the game when she played against South Korea at Suncorp. They ripped in behind her all night, could have scored a stack of goals. So, and the final goal when Lydia Williams got lobbed, that was a long ball from the keeper, bouncing around, and Gemma Simon got run around for a first-time finish.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think...
Don't forget the first goal... was Claire Polkinghorne getting knocked off?
Yeah, that's not going to happen terribly frequently.
No.
So I think a couple of the goals which sort of set the scene, the first one had two errors in one, two errors from players who don't normally make errors like that. So when's the next time realistically you think Claire Polkinghorne's going to get knocked off the ball? It's not going to happen.
And the altitude may have been a factor as well because they were misjudging the ball flight.
Could have been. And then Alana Kennedy in trying to patch up and cover for Claire's error or Claire's loss in that contest... She overcommitted horribly. That's a mistake Alana doesn't make frequently. And so those two are, in the one play were very, very correctable errors and unlikely errors from two fabulous players. I think on the Milicic thing with Caitlin Ford at number 10, yeah, great. Why didn't we, given the athletic prowess of the US, given the space that very fast players had to work in, because Australia presses on to play, which does leave space for very athletic American players to attack, and then the luxury of replacing 100-goal international player Alex Lloyd with Carly Alex Morgan with Carly Lloyd, another 100-goal-plus international. These are big players that you've got to deal with. So why not that third defender?
Alex Lloyd. Was that – you were amazing?
Yeah, right. Why not have that third defender if you've got a problem at left fullback? Bring in Ralston, desperate to see how she went against rock-solid opposition. That first goal, perhaps then, with a third central defender, with that extra cover, certainly with the game sense that Ralston's got, might have been diffused, right? And then you can find a place maybe for a Tamika Butt in an overlapping left-side position if Steph Catley's not well enough, and Emily and Ellie Carpenter certainly got the engines to cover up and down the right-hand side. That was one little thing I wanted to see maybe experimented with in that game that we didn't get. But I thought generally the performance was very, very good.
Yep.
But it does underscore there is no country in the world that invests in women's football like America. There just isn't. And it's not American soccer that does it. It's college sport in America churning out hundreds of girls of international quality, really, on a yearly basis. So the very, very best obviously get picked by just the US national team. They have got so much strength in women's football purely because of the decades of investment, high quality investment that's gone into developing women's sport there.
And what's the route to get to the national team? It's to play that college soccer and then your way into an NWSL team and then catch the eye of the US coach. But what we have is Ellie Carpenter, who debuted as a 15-year-old. She now plays in the NWSL. Once she turned 18, she found a contract with the Portland Thorns. I think she might be the best right back in the world right now. What a phenomenal player.
Speaking of which, what about Mary Fowler? What did you make of her briefly?
She had a run out.
Take her to the World Cup?
Ahead of a Princess Sabini? I don't know.
Long-term future?
Is there a spot there? I don't know.
Is the 23rd spot in a World Cup squad something that you're never going to play, so you're just using it for experience?
I think you probably do play against maybe in the second game.
Mm.
Well, Razzo, Razzo, Devanna, Ford, Kerr. There's four immediately that you got to pick and then Lagazzo, if she's fit, and then Kaya Simon, if she gets back fit, and you're going to take Fowler's going to knock one of them out. I can't see it.
Long-term thinking.
But Ralston, what an opportunity missed.
I think so.
Not playing her in that game. I mean, we need another centre half in the squad. Could maybe a challenge Laura Alloway for a spot in that World Cup. And Ralston's there, she's training, and doesn't get a gig. Now, that was strange.
You didn't mention Gaelnik in your lineup of strikers.
Yes,
exactly. There's another one. And Gaelnik or Razzo should have started in that wide right area instead of Tamika Butt. Mm. I mean, Butt's got a great engine, probably wins the GPS stats and what have you. But if she's not playing the number 10, then she's not in the team ahead of Arazzo or Gaelnik. Come on.
So the other teams in Australia's group were all in action over the past week. Brazil played twice. They lost to Spain 2-1 and, interestingly, lost to Scotland 1-0. Italy beat the Republic of Ireland 2-1 overnight and they drew 1-1 with Poland, and Jamaica had a 1-1 draw with South Africa. You'd still fancy Australia definitely are going to probably get out of that group.
Well, yeah, I'm so encouraged by that performance, even though they lost 5-3.
Yeah, likewise. Play them in a neutral venue.
Yeah. Have Catley at left back.
After Ante's had more time with them. Yeah. To smooth things out, I think there are a big chance of being able to knock them over. Absolutely. Let's move to the A-League. Obviously, all the talk coming out of the round of A-League was in regards to playing surfaces, in particular at the SCG, where it looks as though, fortunately, Terry Antonis hasn't suffered a serious injury, but we were so worried when he was taken off the pitch in about the 70th minute of the Big Blue. Harps, a lot of hue and cry about, we deserve better. We all agree. But if you look at the short-term future, this isn't going to change for a long time because simply, like, Sydney's going to get two new stadia, but they're still going to have multiple sports playing on them. So we're always going to have this problem.
Yeah. I mean, it's what we're seeing now is not going to be resolved quickly, and the solution they've come up with is not going to fix everyone's problems. You're 100% right. But in the short term, we're in this mess because of an utter lack of planning from elected officials, an utter lack of planning, all the whilst they've not been planning. They've been allowing suburban venues, which the sports are now calling on, to just decay, with the exception of Cogra Oval, right? But even the money that's been spent on Cogra Jubilee Oval, where Sydney have played a lot of their games, to me, can we just bite the bullet and say that we need access to rectangular grounds? You know, Sydney doesn't need Aussie rules grounds.
Let's make this more national too, because Brisbane have got the same problems, obviously.
Sure, yeah. Sure. Well, it's the same issue, but it's Sydney and that's happening at the moment. I mean, yeah. Wouldn't you love this to be a problem in Brisbane, not having Suncorp available because it was getting redeveloped? Where else do you play in Brisbane? The Queensland government probably feeds too much off the inertia at New South Wales government level. The fact that any discussion about this in Queensland doesn't even get past the first page of an application. It's ridiculous. I mean, the lack of investment in sport in this country, when you look at the federal budget too, as an aside, we might talk about this later, there is obviously money slushing around. Obviously money. You look at the pledges that were made out of last week's budget, and then a politician cannot look you in the eye and say there's no money for this or that. There's money. They're just making bad calls with what they choose to fund, in my opinion.
ANZ Stadium had traffic through there last weekend, and the pitch they turned out on the weekend for the NRL game that I was out there doing, Parramatta Cronulla on the Saturday night, outstanding after all the traffic they've had. So maybe the curator there needs to be tapped up for a few of these venues, because that's had a checkered past, but it seems to be brilliant week in, week out, even when there is heavy traffic.
Well, what's Amy Park's answer? We have never had one issue watching Melbourne City or Melbourne Victory or the national teams or the W League play at Amy Park in Melbourne. Never once. Mm. Now, you could say they don't have as much traffic, but they have two A League teams, W League teams playing, Melbourne Storm
and the
Rebels. So never once has that pitch looked anything other than pristine. Is it the climate in Melbourne that helps it do it? Is it the makeup of the turf? It can't be that hard to answer these questions. Mm. And the real bugbear in this, given as we all know, and sports administrators won't need to be told this, the almost outside of player wages, the significant encumbrance on their club budget is stadium hire.
Mm.
Right, we accept that. However, if you're going to charge penthouse fees, you deliver a penthouse. And any moment, like the weekend for Sydney FC, if you don't deliver the penthouse, you charge an outhouse rent.
Mm.
And even more so, you compensate for clubs for damage to brand, right? Mm. In this image of in this era of presentation and match presentation and television pitches and brand presentation, not only should clubs not have to hemorrhage financially because of ground hire for substandard facilities, what about the notion of compensating for the damage it does to the optics of your brand? A-League being presented at grounds which are cow paddocks, as they've been called, around the venues for years, and it damages what you're trying to do. And I think there are cases for compensation in this.
And Kevin Muscat said, who passed this?
Yep.
Who passed it? Who at the A-League passed that ground?
Well, it'd be the clubs as well, yep.
But I was there Thursday night football for rugby league, and I posted a photo. I said, you must know an A-League game's coming up on the weekend, because look at this. Look at this patchwork quilt. Sand-based everywhere, cricket pitch, schmozzle. You knew it was going to be bad on Thursday/Wednesday.
It'll happen one day that the captains will agree that this pitch isn't up to it and we're not playing, but it's going to take a brave captain to turn up on game day and say...
And a referee at the moment.
And a referee.
At the moment, it's in that well. With the referees. Imagine the pressure on the referees, especially if they're in line for the Brazzalis, for saying this game can't go on because it's not up to standard. I mean...
The other thing about the SCG, right, so the pitch surface isn't great, but put yourself in the position of most of the people at the ground there who are fans.
Mm.
It's not a great ground for the fans either.
It's like terrible.
The grounds away. And broadcast, it doesn't look great. You guys are an absolute mile away from the action when you're calling the match. So it just doesn't work.
It's bad.
As a football venue, I love the SCG. Been going there for many, many, many years. But it's mostly to watch cricket and AFL.
But it's... We are old enough to grow up when the Wallabies, club rugby match of the day was regularly played at the SCG, rugby league was regularly played at the SCG. So we are of the generation it's actually an interesting generation, because we did grow up and that was acceptable. That's just how you watch sport.
Mm.
But television has made such inroads into the coverage of sport. It is now such an intimate medium with tight camera shots, etc., and the dulcet tones of B-Speed taking you right into the action, the sweaty groins, the ripped shirts.
He's as good as the Alan McGilvray that we grew up with, and the Norman Mays.
And no one describes a sweaty groin quite like Speed B. Yeah, but the whole thing's moved on past our generation of growing up you just, that's the way you watch sport. Well, the watching of sport has evolved at warp speed, right? And facilities haven't gone with it. And the managers of these facilities have to realise that, because there is a lot of money hedged and invested in modern day sport, and the facilities in general have not kept pace.
Another podcast we could probably do for 40 minutes, but let's briefly touch on it too. Ticket prices, Harps. I know this is something that's raised your ire during the week, and we sort of touched on it the other week when we were talking about what we can learn out of AFLW. Does it get to the stage now with the A-League whereby we just need to make tickets literally as cheap as possible?
Across
a $5, a $10, just to get people in and enjoy the atmosphere and enjoy the ground?
Across the sports, Muzz, and Speedy's been going on about this as ticket prices, you know, for a long time. You know, we, along with raising standards of facilities, we've got to get enough people saying, hang on a minute, we are excluding people from sport. Sports are excluding fans from sport because of the cost of stuff. And in our case, the cost of kids to play cuts a whole pile of kids out. The cost of kids to attend sport, live sport, cuts families out. The cost of kids to watch it on television. And someone has to break this cycle. And attending sport should be almost minimum. If you've got to make money out of fans going to the sport, bump up the beer prices. I've got no problem with beer prices at grounds being exorbitant if entry is next to nothing. So Phil Rothfield in The Telegraph did a thing on how much it costs to go to the footy, based on a couple of pies, parking, family tickets, family of four, buy a couple of beers. $200, over $200 to go to one game of football, rugby league. Now, Muzz, and it'd be the same in the A-League, average wage in Australia. We've done a quick breakdown.
80 grand.
Talk us through the numbers. What an average family on Australian wages is left after tax?
60 grand, which is $1,200 a week, which means you're spending, you know, a sixth, 16% of your weekly wage just to take the family to the rugby league.
Which you're not going to do.
No.
Because you've got to pay for your rent or your mortgage or your food.
Correct.
It's ridiculously disproportionate.
And it gets back to your stadium hire earlier. They're exorbitant. So the clubs have to, they do their maths and they go, well, if we get 10,000 and we charge them $38 a ticket.
Yeah.
$38 an adult. I mean, I've always said it should be a lobster for an adult and $10 for a kid.
At the extreme end. Like, it's got to be dirt. Get people into the grounds. Because this, in the end...
Club's argument will always be, I'm just giving both sides of the story here, so club's argument's going to be, okay, if you want to go and see U2 or the Foo Fighters, that's going to cost you 150 to 200, you know, obviously, rugby league's...
Once every 3 years, if you're lucky.
Yeah.
Once
in a lifetime. It's a bit different. But they don't want to devalue their product by making the tickets very cheap.
No, they get a value on their product.
The problem with
television.
The problem with sport is you can turn up and watch a dud game, whereas if you go to the Foo Fighters or a concert, you're pretty confident you're going to walk out there having enjoyed your night.
And Borussia Dortmund is a good watch, isn't it? Mm. Aren't they $5 tickets?
Something like that.
$5 tickets.
Producer Phil will know part of the reason the AFL get big crowds every week is the ticket.
You got to go,
and the ticket prices are very reasonable.
You got to get people to go. It's almost got to be a no-brainer, and of course, we're in this twilight zone now with sport and television, I believe. And if something isn't done to correct this situation, wages growth in Australia, big political issue at the moment, completely stagnant over how long, people do not have this disposable income. So then this is going to bite with television, Muzz. You're the expert on this. But over time, empty stands are bad for television as well.
Correct.
Well, it's the beauty of the Premier League. It's what made Premier League so popular. They're packed houses every week. The crowd's going nuts when the goal goes in, and it's great telly, great televisual product. Then you get bigger, rights deals,
etc. People don't notice that Stoke and West Brom, to use two teams, are playing a very ordinary game of football. Mm. The atmosphere's great.
Yeah, well,
part of the reason people turned up to the Wanderers.
All very good.
Now, those first couple of years was because the atmosphere was fantastic.
I'm not trying to rain on your parade. We've got to be careful what we match ourselves with, because there's massive discussion in England about the cost of attending the Premier League as well.
Yep.
How traditional fans have been completely jettisoned in the EPL March because of ticket prices.
Yep.
I mean, I guess the mechanism has to be, you cannot be excluding fans from your sport. And in Australia, that's the case at the moment. And Australia, we haven't got enough people to exclude anyone if we're going to be competitive across the board with everything we try and do.
Mm. And well done to the families who do scrounge the money together and say, I'm going to the A-League, I'm taking my kids to the A-League, and we'll try and, you know, find other room in the budget. But, you know, it's a tough grind.
On the numbers we just crunched, mate, there ain't no more room in the budget. There just is not room in the budget for an average family to go regularly to the football.
And that Perth game recently where they got a good crowd after the two-week build-up, I said on Twitter, or maybe I said it on this podcast, how much money they would have gotten to then put it back into marketing, et cetera. And I said it'd be $30 a ticket. Well, someone reminded me on Twitter that it's $38 an adult to get into the Perth game.
Way too much.
Staying on the A-League, Andrew Howe, guru statistician, on the weekend posted an interesting tweet about Tony Popovich and the fact that the Perth Glory are the oldest team in the A-League this year. They're first on the ladder. The last time Popper was coaching, which was at the Western Sydney Wanderers, he had the seventh oldest team in the A-League. They finished sixth on the ladder. The year before, he had the oldest team. They finished second. The first year he was coaching at the Western Sydney Wanderers, he had the second oldest team and they finished first on the ladder. It got me thinking about how do the oldest teams in the A-League go? Is the A-League encouraging basically to go with older players for experience, et cetera, to win games? Well, Perth, as we said, are currently the oldest team and they finished top. Last season, Sydney were the oldest team. They finished top. The year before, Sydney were the oldest team. They finished top.
Hang on, you mean Graham Arnold wasn't promoting youth?
No. Interestingly enough, the year before that, Western Sydney were the oldest team. They finished second, and so on and so forth. And it even trends all the way back to the NSL, where in the last four seasons of the NSL, the oldest team finished first three times. Perth in 01, 02, 03, 04, and then South Melbourne 01, and they finished second once. So what that shows to me is you don't win anything with kids. Mm. So if we're looking at how we develop, yes, I know.
Owen Hanson.
Yes, exactly. I know that the talk at the moment is all about youth development, et cetera, and how do we get players playing more often. If I'm a coach of the A-League and my future depends on winning games to get me a contract next season, I'm not playing a young player. Mm-hmm. Looking at that.
Well, it makes sense. I mean, you don't lose players to the under-23 tournaments, the under-20 tournaments, et cetera, which is another little fringe benefit of having an old team. But you can also, if you're recruiting older players, you've got a bigger CV to look at and go, had success here, played this many games body, et cetera, played for the Socceroos. Look at the Perth Glory team. They're all the whole back five Socceroos or fringe Socceroos of yesteryear. And then you've brought in Neil Kilkenny in midfield with all his pedigree, English lower leagues and Socceroos level. And you got Andy Keogh at a decent level.
By the looks of it, Speedy, this is the oldest ever team, Perth. Average age of 30.6.
Yeah. Right. But you know what you're going to get.
One of the best we've seen.
You know what you're going to get.
Speed, to your point, that's a really good point about CVs. And why can't clubs generate CVs of their own players? Because they haven't got youth systems embedded. 14 years. We're only now starting to get youth systems. This is why, this is not being smart after the fact, this case was being argued at the time. If you're going to start this, start it. In 10 years' time, your club should be producing your own strikers. Your club should be producing your own wingers according to what type of football your club stands for. Or your club should just stay as a development club and produce players for the market, right? It's exactly what you say about CV, and clubs haven't generated CVs about their own players because they haven't developed any and they've not invested in it.
Harps, you're the player on the panel. If you're a young player coming through now, let's just say, let's go back to Andy Harper being 18. Are you thinking, I've got to head off.
Are you thinking what I'm thinking, B2?
You know that I know.
Are you thinking to yourself, I'm off overseas for a few years because I'm not going to get a look in back here? Wow. And if we look at it, if you look at Mats Luongo, if you look at Mats Baranovic, if you look at Aaron Moy, they all went overseas.
Chris Economides,
they all went overseas in that sort of
Well, there was no A-League spot for them.
Because there was no A-League spot and then they've come back. Mm. Is that the future for Australian football?
Well, I think there's always going to be that element because, you know, the next Mats Luongo is going to come through and have trouble impressing the coach of his local elite academy as well. It's just what happens, right? The mistake we've made is by underinvesting and having a lack of vision and we have just streamlined it too much. So we're just losing way too many. But, you know, the next phase of the A-League has to be the clubs, once they get all this stuff sorted out, setting themselves up as clubs. No one can develop players better than clubs can develop players according to the way they see football. And we haven't had that in the A-League. It's the whole youth systems in the A-League have only just started in the last couple of years. And then, you know, the apex competition for that, the National Youth League, is an eight-game season. I mean, it's just laughable on every measure. But, you know, this, as we go into this new era of the A-League and they're talking about, you know, And I'd love your views on this because mine are strident. I hate a welfare mentality in professional sport where you put restrictions on clubs on what they can and can't do. For example, every A-League team has to have 4 under-23 players.
Oh, I agree.
It's rubbish. If an A-League club thinks, you know what, we know where we sit in the food chain and we are just going to be totally focused on youth, which according to your stats through Andrew Howe-Muzz suggests you're not going to win much. You might be the exception that proves the rule, but you're going to be a production line club. Fine. If the club's owners think that's how we fit with our community, absolutely brilliant. But I hate the notion. I hate the notion of league-wide regulations of this many 18-year-olds, this many 23-year-olds. And that's got to filter through to the NPL as well, by the way, with the player point system, but that's another discussion. Well,
Arzani got his opportunity. Matty Ryan as a goalkeeper. Bernie Abini under Graham Arnold got their chance at the Mariners because that was their modus operandi.
Sainsbury as well. A lot of these guys made a beeline for the Mariners. Yep. And Graham Arnold because they knew they had a good coach.
Yep.
And would get opportunity.
And where are similarly talented players to Bernie Abini, Daniel Arzani, where are they now? They're being stockpiled at Melbourne City in the youth team, playing those 8 games a year, dominating that competition, and the Wanderers have a good stockpile as well. But seemingly, the stockpile of youth players and youth talent is at those two clubs. Iannucci arrived into an A-League game last year and had some outstanding touches. Haven't seen him all season. But he's playing NPL for Melbourne City. He should be.
But you can't blame the coach, though, Speedy. That's my point.
No, but he should be at the Mariners.
Yeah, okay, right.
You know, they should be shared around, not stockpiled at one club when there's 10 clubs around the country where maybe if you filtered them all and got them into one talent went to one club, one talent went to another club, then maybe that one talent can break into the senior team. Mm. But when you've got 10 talents sitting there at Melbourne City, rotting away in the youth team, missing their opportunity to play top-level football against in the A-League. Hello!
There it is.
That's the T-shirt.
It's taken a while. Now, quick, very finally, on the A-League, Harps, tell us why Mirko Boland has given you the Tom Tits over the weekend, the Brad Pitts.
Yeah, he's the... And this is not just him. It's a great discussion. Who are the biggest... I won't say divers, but foul fakers in the competition, the guys who milk
play
it the
actors,
most. Play actors. Now, Fernando Brandan, one of my favourite imports of all time, I thought it was an incredibly exciting play, but
because he brought that shithousery to the A-League.
Yeah, not because of that, because he was a fantastic player, but he did get roundly condemned
for his shithousery.
Yeah, and maybe that was something that forced him out of the competition. Mm. But I tell you, there are worse going around now than Fernando Brandan.
And Mirko Boland's at the top of your list.
He's almost at the top of the list. Asaias is a close second. Fantastic. Love watching Asaias play. But every time there's a half challenge, I start cringing because I'm waiting for him to hit the turf and roll around 28 times. I don't know what we're going to call this segment, but I feel like I'm about to launch on a Brazzales type thing. Asaias and Mirko Boland, Niedermeyer from Melbourne Victory, a centre-half no less, does go down like a failing Asian economy too often.
I was so worried where that line was going halfway through it. I was really worried.
And Mandy's a nudge for Boland for being the worst, the Wellington midfielder. And before people say, oh, you know, you're just hammering the foreigners, well, they can say that, but it's not true because I can't think of one player in Perth full of foreign talent, great talent, that I could accuse of this. I don't think any of the Brisbane guys are like this. The Newcastle guys, I don't see it, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So what are your thoughts? They're mine. I welcome yours.
How do you crack down on?
Well, you've got to change the...
Shame.
Policed within your side.
Oh, I think so. What's
it? We've seen all that before. Was it Daniel from Wellington Phoenix all those years ago? And I think it was Ross Eloisi who pulled him aside and went, no.
Mate, it doesn't work here. And the first thing to do is to call it out, right? Because I like watching Mirko Boland play too, actually. I think he's a good player, except any time there's a challenge. Mate, my skin just tightens. I think, here we go. Here we go. And it's bang out of order in this part of the world.
So he's making out like he's injured or rolling around, or what's he doing?
Both. There was one on the weekend where I can't remember the challenge months, but you were working on the game with me, which got me to thinking about this. Yep. This has to stop, right? And there was just two people running side by side for the ball. There was literally no more than a Wellington player reaching across with his arm. And Boland went down like the proverbial, rolling around, clutching at this club. I go, get up, mate. Get up. You're embarrassing yourself.
Is it a fine line between street smarts and play acting?
Well, no, they're two in the same thing. But what I'm saying is it can become the boy who cried wolf. And you never know when someone's injured. But if this behaviour becomes repeated, you start rolling your eyes when they go down. And you'd hate to miss a serious injury, even one that comes about through innocuous circumstances.
Right, quickly, Champions League this morning, Speedy. Amazingly, and only you would have this ability. You watched two games at once. you watched Liverpool beat Porto and you watched the mighty Tottenham Hotspur overcome Man City 1-0. Yeah. What'd you make, firstly, of your mob, Liverpool?
Well, you know, they could have been opened up big time. Marega for Porto was a sensational striker, a real live wire, and he was getting into goal-scoring opportunities more often than not. So Liverpool get to a 2-0 lead half an hour in and pretty content with that. They think they can go to Portugal, where they won 5-0 last year, to be fair, and just get the job done there with a 2-0 lead. So I think they shut it down a little too early because Marega looks like he'll be a live wire on his home deck, and Liverpool might be clinging on a bit next week. They might have needed a third. But decent build-up. Mo Salah butchered another couple of opportunities.
You off him?
Gee, he lets me down.
Does he?
Lets Liverpool down.
You let yourself down. You let your team down.
Sadio Mane, very good. Firmino had a better game. Decent performance from Liverpool. What do you make of Spurs? You watched them exclusively.
I did.
He's only got eyes for one.
you watched both. I just watched Spurs. Look, if ever they were going to beat Man City, it was going to be at the new stadium, first leg. I mean, obviously, you've now got to go to Man City where they score goals for fun. You've got a one-goal lead, and of course, if you can get one up there, away goals still counts in Champions
League. They count double, don't they?
Yep. So, well, so Man City...
I don't think they count double. Don't tweet me.
If Spurs score at Man City, then Man City have to score three. But obviously, the big talking point coming out of the game was, of course, the injury to Harry Kane, which is a big blow. But look, as a Spurs fan, I was very happy with the first leg result.
Did I hear you rapping your goalkeeper?
Yes. Well, Hugo Lloris...
For denying them the away goal?
Hugo Lloris has been, as we've discussed before, appalling for most of the season, but came up with a big save in the penalty that Danny Rose gave away. So he had a good game. All of the Spurs players played well. They defended very, very well indeed. They play Huddersfield away. No, they play Huddersfield at home this week in the Premier League, and then it's Man City back for the second leg next week. It's still a tough ask to beat Man City.
Yeah, it was Delph.
The Etihad.
Delph on Kane, wasn't it? Yeah, what do you think of the tackle? Okay.
Yeah, I don't have a problem with the tackle. There's a little bit of me thinking to myself, and Harps, you're the striker again. Does he need to make that challenge, Harry Kane? Like, what are you getting out of that? Just putting a bit of pressure on a bloke on the sideline rather than just let him play it.
Where's he done the damage, Kane?
He rolled his ankle on that sort of downward bit just off the of the ground, just off the sideline.
On the apron. Is there enough room there? This is my point.
That he doesn't need to make that challenge. It's almost more risky for him than it is for the team.
But is it an OH&S issue at a new stadium?
We've gone from SCT playing surfaces. We're now going to have a go at the new Spurs stadium, which is like a week old.
The $2 billion Spurs stadium. Yeah. Hey, but you know.
And by the way, Spurs without Harry Kane did very well earlier this year with Son playing up top. It was magnificent.
Given your respective vested interests, you might find it hard to give a shout out to Manchester City. But, you know, they have come from a cup semi-final as well as the hot race for the premiership, and then into a Champions League against a very good...
Did you watch that cup semi-final? Are you aware of over 55s walking football?
Old men win, yeah, mate.
Exactly.
Old men win. The point is, Muzz, they're playing for big stakes on an almost game-by-game basis
for the
now.
Quadruple.
Yeah, and look, you know...
Quintuple, as someone pointed out, they won the Charity Shield.
Credit where it's due. I know they've invested a lot of money and there's... doubt about the veracity of some of that spending. That's for other people to decide. But still, the players playing under this pressure are still rolling out every few days and delivering for their club. So, I mean, you've got to acknowledge that, I reckon, as much as it must pain both of you.
Sets it up nicely for the following week. All right, this weekend, actually, let's look at the next 7 days because we are recording this on Wednesday morning, and if you're listening to it on the train on the way home on Wednesday evening, make sure you get yourself in front of a TV because there's a couple of belting Asian Champions League matches tonight, the first being Sydney versus Shanghai SIPG with their Brazilian triumvirate and Uzbekistani superstar in Akhmadov, but Elkerson, Oscar and Hulk. And if you haven't seen Hulk's goal from the weekend, Speedy, I know you're not doing that game. Mm. Have you seen it?
Yeah.
Up against Adrian, when they were playing Adrian Mijaevski's, I think it's Chongqing Lifan.
He
scores this bomb from about 30 yards out that is still rising when it hits the net. Yeah, it's a phenomenal strike.
Is he the most appropriately nicknamed player on the planet?
Yeah. Has he ever scored a tap-in?
What's his real name?
Who knows? Yeah. Edson Arantes de Nascimento.
And, you know, the way the Brazilians do these things, I reckon he was called Hulk.
Mm.
At delivery, in the Labour
Ward. They looked at him
in the Labour
Ward. Size of this kid.
And that's how they make their mind up quickly. Mm. There's a mate of mine whose friend, I don't know his real name, but he goes by the name of Cabrito, which is goat.
Mm.
And he was named the goat by his grandfather in the Labour Ward.
So the three of us would have been Baldinhos.
The
goat, that's a fair moniker to live up to.
Yeah. Well,
modern day.
But of course now when you're with this bloke and you're calling him Cabrito, you don't think of it the goat. That's just his name. And same with Hulk. What the hell is his real name? No one even knows.
If you're doing nothing tonight and you live in Sydney, get out to Cogra and watch those three.
How much are tickets?
No idea. But that could be very entertaining.
Sure,
and if you're not in Sydney, watch it on TV.
How many types of turf will they be playing?
And then stay up and watch Guangzhou Evergrande against Melbourne Victory.
What time's that kick off?
10 p.m. Australian Eastern Standard Time.
So I'm in here at 10 a.m. recording a podcast. Are you my co-commentator tonight?
I am, Speedy.
So here we are recording a podcast at 10 a.m.
You've got to get to China.
And we're going to be back here at 10 p.m.
You've got to get to China.
Oh, good point. We've got to get to China. We've got to get through customs.
On the Fox Sports private jet.
Time difference. We've got 2 hours to play.
It's a fair sacrifice we make for the Fox Football brand. Anything?
Speedy, I'll just pull out my violin now.
Thursday night, the A-League continues. Friday, listen to this, because we've got A-League, but due to the US Masters Golf,
I
know Brenton Speed will be watching. Friday night, Brisbane versus Wellington is on Fox Sports 503. On Saturday, the doubleheader, first game, Melbourne City versus Adelaide, and then the Sydney Derby is on Fox Sports 506.
Wow.
And then Sunday, the doubleheader, Victory versus Central Coast, followed by Perth versus Newcastle, where they could wrap up the Premier's plate, is on Fox Sports 507. I'm going to leave you with a trivia question that if you can't get the answer, I'm going to leave you hanging with it for 7 days. You ready?
Well, do we have any choice?
No.
That was a great pregnant pause, by the way.
Yeah, yeah. No, people are... Has the podcast stopped?
Hang on, I've just woken up. Hang on. Is there sexual tension in the room? What about the delivery?
That was my mind ticking over.
How can you put me in this situation? I'm going head-to-head with a former Sale of the Century champion.
That's true. Did you
win it all?
He did. He won the whole lot.
For my home viewer, I won nothing.
Yeah. No, you got to watch.
Who'd you beat? The Sporting Superstars was.
Oh, God. Well,
geez. Was that Brandy Alexander and Dunstall and all that?
Yep. No. It was Barry Mitchell, Bangers. It was Bangers Mitchell.
Swan/Carlton.
Whose son's playing very well.
Won the Brownlow. Yeah. Tom Mitchell.
Did he win the Mitchell? Is that right?
Won the Brownlow.
Is that right?
Last year.
And he's out all season with a knee injury.
Well, Sale of the Century will do that too.
Yeah.
Paul Ruse was on it, I believe.
Really?
Two or three others, but you know.
What did you get out of it?
An Omega Seamaster Professional.
And your home viewer?
Is it on YouTube so that people can watch it?
Oh, I don't know, Mus.
Right, you ready? You ready? Who has...
Sale
of the Century.
Okay, I'll do
this
the Kerry
Young.
This
is from Brendan DaCosta. It's Kerry Young. Who has the A-League... I'll give you the answer to the first one, and then you've got to get...
Stephen Silvani was on it too, which was embarrassing because his wife, Jo Bailey, was...
That's not the answer. Sauce is not the answer.
You've got me thinking now, though, mate.
Who has the A-League record for the longest winless streak, and who has the A-League record for the longest winning streak? So I'll give you the first one.
Players or
players. Okay. So the longest winless streak in the A-League is currently held by Kai Rowles, who hasn't won for 28 matches because he was away when he was missing when they won their game this season. So he hasn't won in 28 matches. That's Kai Rowles. So the question for you both, and I'll give you one chance each, otherwise we're coming back next week. Who has the A-League record for the longest winning streak? And I'll tell you the number. It's 17.
Sydney FC.
Hang on. A-League.
Longest player. Winning streak in the A-League. It's one player. He won 17 straight games.
God. Wanderers or Sydney FC?
There you go. Speedy's thinking. You can hear it if you listen closely. Turn up the volume in the car.
Sky Blues. Did they win that many under Arnie?
Have a guess, please.
The player with the longest winning streak.
Correct.
Vessart Berisha.
Harps has gone Vessart Berisha, and I can tell you, Harps, that is absolutely incorrect.
Sydney FC, I have a feeling I've seen this before, but I don't remember it. I'll go.
Come on, Speedy, we can't be back next week. We've got Brazalis to get through.
I was thinking Shannon Cole there for a moment.
That's a very good guess.
But I'm not going to go there.
Oh, you're not going to go there? Nah. Can you spit something out for us so that people can go?
Caceres.
Mars, they've gone.
Anthony Caceres.
Anthony Caceres. Incorrect. So we're back next week. All right. Thank you, Brenton.
No one, so the listeners.
Mate,
they're all going to go and Google it midweek. On. They're all going to go and go. They go, oh, I know more than Brenton's feet.
Is this like Game of Thrones or some sort of cliffhanger?
I like what you've done there. Nice
Game of Thrones week on Foxtel.
Nice link, Speedy. Thank you, Brenton Speed.
Thanks, Mars.
Thank you, Andrew Harper. Thanks for coming in.
Present.
That's all we've got time for this week. Of course, Daniel Garb and Simon Hill will be back on Monday for the flagship Fox Football podcast. We'll be back with the Love Ship next week.
Go the boys.
Bye for now.
So we go have a nap, have a feed, come back.
Yeah, fly to China. Fly to China.
Okay,
go through immigration. That takes a while.